Chapter 5. Now Naaman was commander of the army of the king of Aram. He was a great man in the sight of his master, and highly regarded, because through him the Lord had given victory to Aram. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy. Now bands from Aram had gone out and had taken captive a young girl from Israel, and she served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress,
"If only my master would see the prophet who is in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy."
Naaman went to his master and told him what the girl from Israel had said.
"By all means, go,"
the king of Aram replied.
"I will send a letter to the king of Israel."
So Naaman left, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 sets of clothing. The letter that he took to the king of Israel read,
"With this letter I am sending my servant Naaman to you, so that you may cure him of his leprosy."
As soon as the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his robes and said,
"Am I God? Can I kill and bring back to life? Why does this fellow send someone to me to be cured of his leprosy? See how he was trying to pick a quarrel with me?"
When Elijah, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his robes, he sent him this message.
"Why have you torn your robes? Have the man come to me, and he will know that there is a prophet in Israel."
So Naaman went with his horses and chariots and stopped at the door of Elisha's house. Elijah sent a messenger to say to him,
"Go, wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored, and you will be cleansed."
But Naaman went away angry and said,
"I thought that he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, wave his hand over the spot, and cure me of my leprosy. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than any of the waters of Israel? Couldn't I wash in them and be cleansed?"
So he turned and went off in a rage. Naaman's servants went to him and said,
"My father, if the prophet had told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? How much more then when he tells you, 'Wash and be cleansed'?"
So he went down and dipped himself in the Jordan 7 times, as the man of God had told him. And his flesh was restored and became clean like that of a young boy. Then Naaman and all his attendants went back to the man of God. He stood before him and said,
"Now I know that there is no God in all the world except in Israel. Please, accept now a gift from your servant."
The prophet answered,
"As surely as the Lord lives, whom I serve, I will not accept a thing."
And even though Naaman urged him, he refused.
"If you will not,"
said Naaman,
"please let me, your servant, be given as much earth as a pair of mules can carry. For your servant will never again make burnt offerings and sacrifices to any other god but the Lord. But may the Lord forgive your servant for this one thing. When my master enters the temple of Rimmon to bow down, and he is leaning on my arm, and I bow there also, when I bow down in the temple of Rimmon, may the Lord forgive your servant for this."
"Go in peace,"
Elijah said. After Naaman had traveled some distance, Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said to himself,
"My master was too easy on Naaman, this Aramean, by not accepting from him what he brought. As surely as the Lord lives, I will run after him and get something from him."
So Gehazi hurried after Naaman. When Naaman saw him running toward him, he got down from the chariot to meet him.
"Is everything all right?"
he asked.
"Everything is all right,"
Gehazi answered.
"My master sent me to say, 2 young men from the company of the prophets have just come to me from the hill country of Ephraim. Please give them 1 talent of silver and 2 sets of clothing."
"By all means, take 2 talents,
said Naaman. He urged Gehazi to accept them, and then tied up the 2 talents of silver in 2 bags with 2 sets of clothing. He gave them to 2 of his servants, and they carried them ahead of Gehazi. When Gehazi came to the hill, he took the things from the servants and put them away in the house. He sent the men away, and they left. Then he went in and stood before his master, Elijah.
"Where have you been, Gehazi?"
Elijah asked.
"Your servant didn't go anywhere,"
Gehazi answered. But Elijah said to him,
"Was not my spirit with you when the man got down from his chariot to meet you? Is this the time to take money or to accept clothes, olive groves, vineyards, flocks, herds, or men servants and maid servants? Naaman's leprosy will cling to you and to your descendants forever."
Then Gehazi went from Elijah's presence, and he was leprous, as white as snow. Chapter 6. The company of the prophets said to Elijah,
"Look, the place where we meet with you is too small for us. Let us go to the Jordan, where each of us can get a pole, and let us build a place there for us to live."
And he said,
"Go."
Then one of them said,
"Won't you please come with your servants?"
"I will,"
Elijah replied, and he went with them. They went to the Jordan and began to cut down trees. As one of them was cutting down a tree, the iron axe head fell into the water.
"Oh my Lord!"
he cried out.
"It was borrowed!"
The man of God asked,
"Where did it fall?"
When he showed him the place, Elijah cut a stick and threw it there and made the iron float.
"Lift it out,"
he said. Then the man reached out his hand and took it. Now the king of Aram was at war with Israel. After conferring with his officers, he said,
"I will set up my camp in such and such a place."
The man of God sent word to the king of Israel,
"Beware of passing that place, because the Arameans are going down there."
So the king of Israel checked on the place indicated by the man of God. Time and again, Elisha warned the king so that he was on his guard in such places. This enraged the king of Aram. He summoned his officers and demanded of them,
"Will you not tell me which of us is on the side of the king of Israel?"
"None of us, my lord the king,"
said one of his officers.
"But Elisha, the prophet who is in Israel, tells the king of Israel the very words you speak in your bedroom."
"Go, find out where he is,"
the king ordered,
"so I can send men and capture him."
The report came back,
"He is in Dothan."
Then he sent horses and chariots and a strong force there. They went by night and surrounded the city. When the servant of the man of God got up and went out early the next morning, an army with horses and chariots had surrounded the city.
"Oh, my lord, what shall we do?"
the servant asked.
"Don't be afraid,"
the prophet answered.
"Those who are with us are more than those who are with them."
And Elijah prayed,
"Oh Lord, open his eyes so he may see."
Then the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he looked and saw the hills full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elijah. As the enemy came down toward him, Elijah prayed to the Lord,
"Strike these people with blindness."
So he struck them with blindness, as Elisha had asked. Elisha told them,
"This is not the road, and this is not the city. Follow me, and I will lead you to the man you are looking for."
And he led them to Samaria. After they entered the city, Elisha said,
"Lord, open the eyes of these men so they can see."
Then the Lord opened their eyes, and they looked, and there they were, inside Samaria. When the king of Israel saw them, he asked Elisha,
"Shall I kill them, my father? Shall I kill them?"
"Do not kill them,"
he answered.
"Would you kill men you have captured with your own sword or bow? Set food and water before them so that they may eat and drink, and then go back to their master."
So he prepared a great feast for them, and after they had finished eating and drinking, he sent them away, and they returned to their master. So the bands from Aram stopped raiding Israel's territory. Sometime later, Ben-Hadad, king of Aram, mobilized his entire army and marched up and laid siege to Samaria. There was a great famine in the city. The siege lasted so long that a donkey's head sold for 80 shekels of silver and a quarter of a cab of seed pods for 5 shekels. As the king of Israel was passing by on the wall, a woman cried to him,
"Help me, my lord the king."
The king replied,
"If the Lord does not help you, where can I get help for you? From the threshing floor? From the wine press?"
Then he asked her,
"What's the matter?"
She answered,
"This woman said to me, 'Give up your son so we may eat him today, and tomorrow we'll eat my son.' So we cooked my son and ate him. The next day I said to her, 'Give up your son so we may eat him.' But she had hidden him."
When the king heard the woman's words, he tore his robes. As he went along the wall, the people looked, and there, underneath, he had sackcloth on his body. He said,
"May God deal with me, be it ever so severely, if the head of Elisha, son of Shaphat, remains on his shoulders today."
Now Elisha was sitting in his house, and the elders were sitting with him. The king sent a messenger ahead, but before he arrived, Elisha said to the elders,
"Don't you see how this murderer is sending someone to cut off my head? Look, when the messenger comes, shut the door and hold it shut against him. Is not the sound of his master's footsteps behind him?"
While he was still talking to them, the messenger came down to him, and the king said,
"This disaster is from the Lord. Why should I wait for the Lord any longer?
If I testify about myself, my testimony is not valid. There is another who testifies in my favor, and I know that his testimony about me is valid. You have sent to John, and he has testified to the truth. Not that I accept human testimony, but I mention it that you may be saved. John was a lamp that burned and gave light, and you chose for a time to enjoy his light. I have testimony weightier than that of John. For the very work that the Father has given me to finish, and which I am doing, testifies that the Father has sent me. And the Father who sent me has himself testified concerning me. You have never heard his voice, nor seen his form, nor does his word dwell in you, for you do not believe the one he sent. You diligently study the Scriptures because you think that by them you possess eternal life. These are the Scriptures that testify about me, yet you refuse to come to me to have life. I do not accept praise from men, but I know you. I know that you do not have the love of God in your hearts. I have come in my Father's name, and you do not accept me. But if someone else comes in his own name, you will accept him. How can you believe if you accept praise from one another, yet make no effort to obtain the praise that comes from the only God? But do not think I will accuse you before the Father. Your accuser is Moses, on whom your hopes are set. If you believed Moses, you would believe me, for he wrote about me. But since you do not believe what he wrote, how are you going to believe what I say?